We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Understanding Rudyard Part 4 by Leila Riel. This was the first talk on Saturday morning, September 24, 1983, at the RITA conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 22 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. And now, Leila Riel.
So from his point of view, everything in a cyclic process happens because it needs to happen, because that's, in a sense, the only thing that is possible at that stage, even when we have those decisions to make, that should I do this or should I do the other. Very often, those are not really the real decisions of life. The real decisions of life are in small ways, when everything, the whole of your life, in a very inobtrusive way, is acting on making small decisions that then lead you to something more obvious. But in a sense, the decision has already been made, in a way. That was what Rudyard was talking about, the issue of freedom last night. That then the main thing is to become involved in any kind of experience, to see it as the need, what you need next in your development, what a culture needs next in its development, and to see whatever presents itself as the form through which that occurs as a possible vehicle for fulfilling the potentials that potentially answer to that need. Now, this whole idea of the meeting of need and answer to it is also entirely central to Rudyard's work. And it has been coming out toward the end of his life. There is a kind of cyclic process that has happened there too, because all along he has stressed in one way or another the idea of wholeness. He is stressing it as a major image concept symbol, simply wholeness itself. In this new book, Rhythm of Wholeness, he makes the statement that wholeness is the ultimate idea we can have of the meaning of being. And he talks about, which should be familiar to anyone who has read his work, the idea that anything that exists is a whole. All existence operates in terms of wholes, whether these are wholes in space, such as an organism, or a culture, or a whole in time, a cycle, a process of existence. All of these are wholes, but wholeness pervades all wholes. It's the ness of all wholes. It's the beingness, the ness of the being of all wholes. Wholeness being neither finite nor infinite. He will allow it to be called transfinite, meaning that it can only manifest through wholes. But wholeness as the ultimate idea of being, the beingness of all wholes. Then, at whatever level one operates, the challenge of life is to fulfill the wholeness of that level. Since as human beings, part of the wholeness of humanity, of archetypal man, seems to be the capacity to move from level to level, the motion from level to level is also a fulfillment of that human wholeness in an archetypal sense. But the idea there being to fulfill the wholeness, to fulfill the potentialities and the needs inherent in the human state of being, rather than essentially to try and escape from it. to fulfill that wholeness, again, one must look, this is another major thing in Rudyard's work, is context. Is to fulfill the wholeness of what it means to be human, one has to understand what does it mean to be human. And from Rudyard's point of view, how one understands what it means to be human is to try to understand what the human state is part of. Again, context. A phase of a larger cycle. Always a phase of a larger cycle. Always a sub-whole of a greater whole. Rudyard has of late stopped using the term part. He's said that, in a sense, there are no parts. There are only sub-wholes, because parts are always whole themselves. But that's a semantic problem, and not significant if we all understand what is meant. The idea of being human, then, to try to understand what is humanity. For Rudyard, humanity is a state of being that arises on particular planets at particular times in the development of those planets. A very cosmic kind of picture of what it means to be human. And each of those planets then fulfilling some function in a larger heliocosmic or galactic schema. Now, it has often been a criticism leveled at Rudyard that he takes this much larger cosmic perspective and essentially starts from there. But it's also central in terms of the path that he has pioneered, which is a path of mental development. As much as, to me, as much as in a sense any religious or spiritual path is a path, this path that Rudyard in a sense exemplifies, it is a way of spiritual discipline and training, starting from training the mind and the will. But for him, one must start in terms of these cosmic principles, not to escape from the problems of one's life, not to become intellectual and have dazzling intellectual virtuosity about these kind of things, but precisely in order to give proper context and a sense of wholeness and connectedness to one's life. Again, my sense of it is that Rudyard has arisen as who he is and what he has done as a kind of bridge in this unprecedented place in which Western culture finds itself, which is in the cracks, in the fashionable way of saying it, between paradigms. And even looking toward the idea that a new paradigm will not gel truly for a very long time. I mean, if you think about it, there are many, many currents that are extremely significant, that are converging in the West, currents between East and West, in terms of the areas that science is moving in now, that will take decades, if not centuries, to really work into a kind of gel, a dominant, a coherent, quote, new paradigm. And in the meantime, we are essentially without what culture used to do, without a collective frame of reference that answered these questions for us in the past. In the past, religion and culture were what answered these questions. What does it mean to be human? What do you do about being human? And they answered these rather cosmic questions in a way that, in a sense, we didn't even realize we were asking the questions, and we didn't even realize that they were being answered in particular ways. This is something we'll talk more about on Sunday, specifically in terms of the images and paradigms that we're dealing with here in the West. But that this then held us within a collective frame of reference, and we had that as people in a culture at a time like that, had that as a valid frame of reference for what to fit their actions into and to understand them. The dominant one in the West has in the past stressed this dualism between spirit and matter, between the soul and the body, between God and creatures, creating this kind of very definite schism that in man, essentially, the two opposites meet and are very much antagonists. I mean, if you read Genesis, it's the idea that the lower aspect, the earthly aspect of man, is formed out of the dust of the earth and is definitely the lower aspect of it, and that the consciousness facilities of human beings come from above, as it were, and are breathed into Adam. But essentially, we're here as kind of half-alien zookeepers, that we don't really belong here, and we shouldn't get too involved with the natives. And this battle has raged in the collective cultural soul of the West. Now, Rudyard, of course, for those of you who've read his philosophical work, understand that a great deal of what he talks about deals with the interplay between the involution of spirit, as it were, the descent, and again, he pointed that out last night, descent, down, and up. These are very difficult terms, but they're the best we have, that deal with this involution of spiritual forces and the evolution of matter and consciousness born of matter to meet in the middle. But for Rudyard, where they meet is the mind. And this is one of the things that you'll see as a very important theme, especially in Implanetarization and in Rhythm of Wholeness, the idea of man, archetypally speaking, as being essentially not dual, but triune. This is something, you know, it's very easy to say body, mind, and spirit. Okay. And that flips off one's tongue, especially in April when there's a festival in San Francisco that occurs that's called the Body, Mind, Spirit Festival. It's very easy to say that, but to realize that it's that central aspect that makes us human, that on the one hand differentiates us from the animals in a positive sense and perhaps limits us from higher spiritual levels than the other, is the mind. But the mind to be used as a meeting place for spirit and matter within each one of us is that through the development of that mind, by being able yourself to transform intellectual concepts into significant images, which then become really polarizing symbols in your life, is to develop that noetic field, which Rudyard calls the ideity field in Planetarization, to develop a mind field that can act as integrator of spirit and matter, and that eventually becomes the place where that occurs in the perfected human being, in what Rudyard has talked about as the gateway to the Pleroma level of being able, as a fully actualized, fully adequate vehicle, individualized, to embody one aspect of spirit, what he talks about as one letter of the original, originating, creative word, in the being of a fully adequate human being. Now, to do this and to achieve that, to work toward achieving that, is not something that you do for yourself, essentially. It is, and it's not. If you do that, if the basic attitude there is essentially one of, well, there's this state beyond the human state that Rudyard talks about, and it's transpersonal, and it's glamorous, and there are all these words. First of all, I don't think that that quality of attitude, even tremendous ego pride behind it, would really be enough to get anybody there. One does that because, in a sense, some aspect of one's dharma is open to that. And one, as part of a collective situation, in a time when there is great chaos, the collective frames of reference are falling apart, we are forced to formulate new individual frames of reference, which then force the development of this mind and the field of mind as a potentially sacred place. To do that is to operate on behalf of the collective. It's sort of like, I know now people talk about the 100th monkey phenomenon, but there are things that are much simpler than that. Years ago, when no one could run a 4-minute mile, and then the first man ran a 4-minute mile. And then it took a long time for the second man to be able to do it, but the third man could do it sooner, and then the fourth man, and then pretty soon any miler worth his salt could do that. That's part of that collective mind field of the planet, of which we are all parts, to which we contribute and into which we are tuned in. to build this kind of mind, to go through this kind of process of study, yes, satisfies a need for oneself. Otherwise, one wouldn't get involved in doing it to begin with. But perhaps even more importantly, it is part of this collective process. And all work that is done by anyone toward that end is there in the collective mind field of the planet. And that essentially is what we're talking about in terms of transpersonal activity, this path through developing the mind as a lens to focus the wholeness of the human state in a particular being, you, me, which then, although particularized, is still differentiated from but not separate from the totality of Anthropos, the totality of humanity on the planet Earth. First step, essentially, is the process of individualization, which Dan will talk about this afternoon, in terms of the levels of movement. And that, in order to be, can't stress it enough, in order to be wholesome and future-moving, not merely anarchic and ego-feeding, requires the development of this kind of new mind, which Rudyard calls the mind of wholeness. Now, ideally, that's what we're here to do this weekend, is to answer the kind of questions for each of us to become oriented in our own process of developing that mind, that capacity. That's good timing. Clock's slow. Bells are fast. Are there any?
I have a question, Myla. I didn't quite catch what you, I didn't make a connection to what you were saying, where we're doers of the process, like we go for it, or does it come to us? I can't remember.
Both. Both. It's one of the things that's key, I think, in everything I've learned from Rudyard's work, is that nothing is one way. Everything always works two ways. What he talks about is two-way evolution or involution, evolution, and this idea of transformation, but you can't change anything. It's always a meeting. It's always a two-way kind of thing. For example, I mean, in someone, in doing people's charts and all, I get to look at a lot of lives, which is wonderful. I mean, seriously, it's a real blessing to be able to do that. It helps one get out of one's own perspective and not being bound by that. But generally what there is what Rudyard was talking about, a kind of discontent with the status quo that oftentimes is just built in by the nature of it, or oftentimes is forced by very difficult circumstances. So there's a feeling that one needs to get out of where one is. One needs change. Usually it manifests as a negative thing, is that one is going away from something, but you don't know yet what you're going toward. And that's one of the great challenges of life, is to be able to turn the away from into a toward. Oftentimes what happens, usually I think what happens, is that life presents a potential toward. But the great problem is whether or not we take it. Life always answers those needs. But one can be, in a sense, so involved with rebellion and against for the sake of against, because one had to become against to pull out of where one was, that when there comes a toward, one can't recognize it. Or that what is asked of one in terms of severance, in terms of giving up, is so great that one cannot do that. Or it can happen that in very small ways, life step by step brings the vehicle for the eventual fulfillment of that need and fulfillment of the Dharma. I think, you know, one of the great problems I see, and in a way I feel kind of awkward talking about it, because I don't want to set myself up as having experienced that, and yet, well, let me tell you what it is that having lived with Rudyard now for 10 years, I do feel a certain kind of transfer. I must feel like I've lived 88 years too, do you know what I mean? For anyone who's ever been really close to a grandparent or a mentor, those are tremendously important relationships. It's so sad that we don't have that anymore, to realize how different things are now from what they used to be, and not to take for granted that things are and have always been the way they are. And you don't get that perspective until you get old yourself. Unless you have, I mean, and you will get it when you get old yourself if you're not too bitter by that time. But if you have a relationship with someone older than you, you do get that kind of sense of time. And for me, Rudyard has been an exemplar to look at the ages and stages. I know oftentimes for me at my birthday every year, it's a time of, well, what was Rudyard doing when he turned whatever the age was? And it's very comforting, especially with his life, because it did take a long time to develop. And as he mentioned, you know, he said that oftentimes in your 20s, you think you're almost there. You know, you've got it solved. And then it begins to look different in the 30s and the 40s. And then you realize in the 50s that maybe you're just starting, or maybe not even until the 60s. So the time frame really has to stretch in terms of this kind of living. In terms of living within a socioculture frame of reference, of becoming successful at a profession, of establishing a family, those kind of things, that time frame is of necessity shorter. Different tools are required. It taps into different aspects of human being. But this process is a process that essentially does not yield results early. That's just the way it is. And so there is, oftentimes it seems at first that there's only the push, there's only the aspiration, there's only the need that's unfulfilled. But given time, the edge of that need has to wear off. The personal edge to it has to, it's like rounding mountains in time. That has to be rounded, as it were, and made into something more receptive. And then life can answer. But life is answering all the way along if we can just accept it.
So that's the key to transformation.
Yeah, I think Rudyard has often said that it's very simple, is that there are very few qualities that are needed. Courage, humility, and perseverance. Anything else? Okay, let's break for a while before lunch. Lunch is at noon. And then what time? We start back at 1:30. So we have 2 hours now for... This is the nicest part of the day for those of you who are not...
This is the end of Understanding Rudyard Part 4 by Leila Rael. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.